Okay, hello, welcome to the podcast and welcome to Swim Coaches podcast. This week we've got talking about S&C, bits like that. So if you don't remember, I'm Clive Marquis. My co-host is
Sam Redman. Hi guys.
And today we've got Tom Company with us.
Hello.
He's got a master's in sports performance and a certified physical preparation specialist. And you're the S&C coach for Ports and Norse at the moment, is that correct?
I am indeed.
Bingo. Right. So we're going to be mainly talking about how S&C is going to help improve swimmers in the pool and bits like that, whether that be younger swimmers coming through the system or older swimmers, and how they can improve outside the pool to be better in the pool. But you yourself aren't from a swimming background at all. You're from...
Yes. So I grew up playing, like, I swam as a kid, like, I obviously swimming is one of those sports where you have to be up super early in the morning and all that kind of stuff. And my mum just was not having any of it. I ended up stopped swimming around kind of 8 years old and started playing, well, 8, 9, whatever, and then started finding other sports to do. Played football like most kids do. Then I kind of fell in love with basketball around 12, 13, 14 years old. And just continue playing that. Worked my way up, played internationally for a couple of years for Scotland, which was, you know, great. Allowed me to travel the world and stuff. And it's actually the reason why I ended up going to uni, because my grades weren't great during my A-levels. But when I was looking at universities, I ended up applying obviously for scholarships and all that kind of stuff, and the University of Derby caught wind of my scholarship and the coaches I was talking to, and they were like, "No, you're not going to go do a foundation degree in coaching, you know, the other side of the city. We want you in the main campus so that you can take 5 minutes, 10 minutes going to training and back, and you're going to represent the university playing basketball." And then while I was at uni, obviously I did my undergrad in sport and exercise science. Was still playing basketball, you know. Went down the route of S&C. Went to do my masters, and then now I'm here.
Now, thank you. Because this is what I was thinking. It's like, why swimming? Like, why from basketball and all that? You could have gone into basketball and stuff, but you end up going into swimming.
Well, so. I will never forget this. My very first S&C lecture while I'm an undergrad was the sport doesn't matter, right? Because growing up in England, everyone who wants to be an S&C or sports tends to want to go into football. But that very first lecture is like, look, it's very competitive to get into football. The sport doesn't matter. The processes that you've got to go through, going through your needs analysis, what the sport does, the biomechanics and movement. Injury rates, all this kind of stuff is exactly the same. Doesn't matter what the sport is. And I took that on board and was like, right, okay. During all my assessments, we tried to go away from our sports. So I tried to go away from basketball. I tried to go away from rugby. You know, we tried to explore other sports like tennis and all this kind of stuff. And again, I carried that on in my kind of trying to find jobs or going into, you know, starting getting into work. Was like, I don't really care if I go into basketball. I don't really want to go into football because I know how competitive it's going to be, but let me just explore other sports. So I went and worked in hockey for a little bit. I actually worked for a secondary school where I was working with their kind of elite kids coming through the school, and again, I get to work with a bunch of different sports. It's netball, it's a para swimmer, it's table tennis, it's, you know, different sports. And then when I went to do my masters, and there was a placement module on there, and it was like, right, okay, what, you know, and Claudia, who was the top squad coach at the time, came to the university going, look, we're looking for some S&C help. I was the first person to put my hand up because I was like, the sport doesn't matter. When I got into swimming, I was super intrigued because it kind of, my initial reaction was like, everything's flipped on its head. The movement patterns aren't predicated by your legs. Your arms are doing most of the work. So it's how can we take certain aspects of training, maybe the ankle or the knee complex, and how can we safely put that into the shoulder? Does it work? Are we like, what are we trying to do? Like, how are we going to improve the power through that shoulder complex so that they can improve pull power and all that kind of stuff? So yeah, once my teeth got into that, I was buzzing, and I was with it.
No.
So can we just quickly define, obviously, what S&C means, just for people who don't know what S&C means? Just really quick.
It's strength conditioning. So swimming, cool. I kind of look at it and go, swimming, it's all conditioning in itself. So when I'm an S&C coach, yes, I have understanding of the physiological adaptations of swimming. However, I will do most of the strength work, power work, mobility work.
Awesome. Nice.
That makes sense. So why is strength and conditioning important in a swim program?
Lots of different reasons, right? Not necessarily just swimming, but we know that strength training reduces the likelihood of injuries, right? To be able to, because you're able to deal with certain intensities worth of work, right? Muscles are stronger and work and stuff. We can obviously then do stuff to reduce injuries, work like overuse stuff, targeting muscle groups and stuff to keep mobility through the shoulder or the hips or whatever. Core stability, stuff that you don't necessarily get if you're just spending your life swimming. I think the other really important part of land training for swimmers is, you spend your whole lives or your whole sport suspended in water, so you don't really have any interaction with gravity. Forcing them to, whether it be move their own body weight, move external load, or just move and have the awareness of what my body is doing, and you having to control it, I think is really important.
Yeah, no, for sure. I agree. So I also think, especially with swim programs, and with any programs at this point, kids as well at young ages don't know how to do simple things like jump in, squat in, push-ups, like simple things, because now back in the day, kids used to go out, play outside, running around, but it's like nowadays they're not so much going out. So
you're completely right. I mean, with the massive influence of technology and how that is, rocketed, like everyone kind of glued to the phone, sat on the sofa watching Netflix. Right, lockdown doesn't help. Everyone's just sat on the sofa. Nobody really does any moving. I think I obviously haven't been in, a school for a while, but I keep hearing that PE for kids at schools is slowly declining as well. They're not addressing some of these things that we're obviously now talking about in terms of teaching kids how to squat, to push up, to jump, to explore their movement capacity. So yeah, it's, at the youth level, it's definitely changing.
Yeah, no, I agree. Because I always thought implementing the Soviet physical preparedness kind of stuff, like implementing that kind of training at a younger age to get it in.
Yeah. But it's not just this. The UKSEA has got their own youth development pathways and stuff as well. It's all based on, effectively, it's all based on getting kids to move, right? Before kids go through puberty, strictly from an S&C point of view, before they hit puberty and before they start to hit their growth spurts, most of their adaptations are going to come neurally, right? So it's just getting kids to move at that point.
Yeah.
So in your sort of strength and condition role at North Sea, you're in charge of a lot of different squads,
yeah,
who are all different abilities and all different ages. So if you had three people who came to the gym, so say you had someone who is in a junior squad, mm-hmm. Someone who is in a senior performance squad, and then say someone who is in a master squad and they've never done any gym work at all, how would you introduce them into the sort of strength and conditioning side of things differently? Would there be any difference between the three?
How would you have a training background?
No land training background.
No, they're the same then. As far as I'm concerned, they're still pretty much the same. The way it's delivered is different. So, like, the junior athlete is going to have more fun doing that session because it's going to be through doing games, right? But I'm going to teach them how to squat, how to pull, how to, you know, engage their core, do a push-up, all this kind of stuff, right? The senior performance and the master's athlete, right, again, if they've had no land training background, I will probably, the delivery will be pretty much similar because they're of a emotional age where they can do it. But, you know, it's exactly the same. It's, can you squat? Can you push? Can you pull? Can you hinge? Before we can do anything else.
No, that makes perfect sense. And I mean, so for instance, like I've said in podcasts before, I coach the master squad. So my range of abilities, it completely different ages and what have you. And I understand how hard it can be making a session that everyone can get some form of benefit out of.
Yeah.
The strength and conditioning side of stuff, how do you go about that? Because obviously you have a group. So then mm-hmm. we'll use senior performance as an example. So age range, what, 13 through to 17, 18?
Yeah.
Sort of like general ages. All completely different stages of growth and what have you, and ability in the pool, in the gym. What are the struggles with that? How do you overcome their different abilities and what have you within their programming?
I think, so I'm quite fortunate that now that I've been with the club for a number of years, the guys that have been with me for those 2 or 3 years now, I can pretty much, I don't want to say I can just let them get on with it, but like I know because they've been with me so long, I know their movement capabilities are really strong, right? I know they can go through all, I could throw any pretty much any movement pattern at them and they would be able to move through control and safely. So I can look to program some stuff slightly differently for them. Initially when I first started, it was right, quickly assess who can do what.
Mm.
And then once I've got that, it's giving guys options. So I did I'm doing this now actually with doing everything through Zoom, right? Let's take a push-up, for example. I've got a group setting, there's 25 of them, but I only have one exercise that I can do really, and that's the push-up. So how can I give three levels of difficulty so that everyone can get something good out of it? Well, we've got a half push-up for the people that can't do push-ups like properly, so they're on their knees, but as long as they're maintaining good technique, I'm happy. We've got then the guys that are kind of, so that's level one. Level two would be, right, you're going to do a normal push-up.
Mm-hmm.
And then a level three would be playing around with something like a pendulum push-up where we're, you know, overloading one side and we're starting to develop to maybe be able to do a single arm push-up, right? And that's how I would, you know, and I could do the same thing with squatting, for example, like, right, squats, split squat, forward lunge, for example, right? They're all knee dominant exercises. But now everyone can still get a good knee dominant exercise, whatever they want to put into it, they get out.
Amazing. No, it makes perfect sense. Perfect sense.
Yeah, sure. What are you like? So I know a lot of the listeners on here are going to be interested about what specific areas are going to help swimmers in themselves. So what can swim coaches implement without having to go into lifting weights and stuff like that for their swimmers to help implement them getting faster in and out of the pool?
What is like the core thing? So keep it simple, right? You don't have to go crazy, like you said. You don't have to be lifting weights. Get them to squat really well, body weight. Get them to be able to row really well, body weight, right? So they have control of their shoulder blades. Go through things like push-ups or you know, probably do stuff if you want to. You probably do stuff like glute bridges and that, rather. But if you can teach them how to hinge properly really well, then yeah, that would be. I mean, those would, you've got to go through those four movement patterns first of all, get them to be able to do that, right? Fifth one would be core. You know, make sure they're planking, you know, dead bugs, whatever, so they're strong, they're stable through their core. Yeah, that, I think those are the five kind of movement patterns. I think there's another one that I'm diving into more and more at the moment, which is all around breathing. You know, something that we do 24,000 times a day, yet nobody really thinks of it as a movement pattern. But we can actually control our breathing. And actually, there's some really nice stuff showing that actually just getting control of your breathing, you can start to free up shoulder mobility, hip mobility, core strength, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, those are, if I had to give you five or six things to, you know, to build your a land training program, go through the movement patterns, a bit of core, maybe a bit of breathing stuff, and then make sure those shoulders and hips are not.
So a squat, a push and a pull, and then core work. Job's a good one.
Yeah. Love it. Tell us more about this breathing then, because you're saying now that breathing is like, could be a big thing to open up more gains as such.
So you're completely right. So the, breathing is, if you have a poor breathing pattern, right, you are a vertical breather. So every time you take a breath in, right, you shrug your shoulders or your rib cage is lifting up, right? You're basically recruiting muscles around the shoulder and your chest and your upper back to breathe. And as I said, 24,000 times a day, right? So you're literally asking your shoulders to be tight or your neck to be tight. So simply by altering the way you breathe, right? So that you are breathing with your diaphragm, right? So you've got, you know, I'm trying to go away from belly breathing, but more horizontal breathing or belly breathing, right? You're asking a diaphragm to do the work. So now all the musculature around your shoulders and your chest and your neck and that can relax. It's no longer got to deal with all this extra load. It can just kind of relax and, right, do what it was designed to do. So there's stories of Dana. I forgot her last name now, this is bugging me. She who works with MLB, American football, and NBA guys, right? And she went to the Texans and did some work with Deshaun Watson, who's their quarterback, and got him up in front of the entire group and gone, right, let's alter the way you breathe. She tested her into his internal rotation of the shoulder. Changed the way you breathed. And suddenly his internal rotation of the shoulder just freed up and changed, right?
Just like that.
In five or six breaths. Because now the shoulder can do what it was designed to do and go, oh, I don't have to be tense anymore. Bang. So we apply that. So this is why I'm applying this stuff into swimmers, because shoulder mobility and everything is super important. And obviously the way the diaphragm, its insertion points, it obviously is around the rib cage, the lumbar spine, and then where it connects to the hip is very close to where the hip flexors, one of your hip flexors attaches to, right? And then the way it works with your pelvic floor, it helps to free up your hip mobility as well, which would then go into jump performance. So now you're talking coming off the blocks. If you're a breaststroker, you've got more control through your hips for breaststroke kick, coming off the wall, all this kind of stuff. So, yeah.
Because we all understand the power of the breath within swimming, breath control, in between repetitions. You're trying not to overbreathe. Slower breathing just helps in between recovery of each interval. But I never even thought about how it can help with musculature and positioning, everything like that. Yeah. That's so cool. Very cool.
It's a bit crazy, really, isn't it?
That is actually pretty. I've never really, well, until sweet Tom's, you're my S&C coach. So you've spoken to me about this before. I still trying to get my head around all this breathing thing, but I, over lockdown, I have been doing some of the stuff you can tell me to do, and I have felt more freedom through my shoulders and bits like that. So it's a really interesting concept. Yeah. You should put more of it on your Instagram page. We'll put links to your Instagram page.
I probably should. I'm not very active on my socials at the moment. I probably should be doing more.
We've got so much to offer at the moment. So for those listening, Tom is doing online Zoom strength conditioning sessions with all of the Ports of North Sea swimmers at the moment. And I'm joining in with the senior performance guys. And quite frankly, I was ruined after a few squats and what have you. And I'm fairly competent in the gym, but just thinking of stuff differently, completely different stimulus, but a positive stimulus. So Tom really knows this stuff. So really glad to have you on today. It's awesome.
Yeah, no, big. Right. We've got another question coming through is when we're at a competition and bits like that, a lot of people are saying like 2 weeks before the competition, whoa, stay away from weights and stuff like that. You don't want to be stressing the stimulus too much. Whereas I'm in my opinion and in your opinion as well, and I think Sam's in the same boat, is
most definitely
lifting weights before a race is not a bad thing at all. It's probably a good thing. It's going to help you swim faster.
Yeah.
Why is that?
What are we talking about?
Are we talking about taper period or during like pre-race? What are we talking?
Let's start from taper all the way to the before you get.
Okay, so taper would be I mean you can taper in the land and kind of gym the same way you would taper for the pool, right? If you think about it, Olympic weightlifters have been doing this for years. Right, they have to taper before a meet, and you'll see them PB or lift something stupidly heavy at their thing, right? So we can taper in the weight room and still have guys fresh for race day. My thing, the way I approach the other way I approach taper is I will do stuff that will not develop soreness, like that neck day soreness. Right, so we know soreness comes from kind of eccentric loading, right? So that down portion of the down portion of a jump, right? If we stay away from any real eccentric stress, and we just do kind of box jumps, for example, right? I can still get a high neural output, right? Velocity stuff. And not be sore the next day, right? And then we can, and then we slowly pull stuff out, less volume, all that kind of stuff through into taper.
So it's the eccentric which really causes that soreness level, the lowering. That's what causes the soreness.
Yeah.
But the explosive, say if you're doing a pull-up, for instance, the explosive pull-up and then let yourself down fairly quickly, that
But the problem with that would be you're now asking, like, if guys are loaded, like they've got weight between their legs, now you're asking an explosive pull up and then to drop, and then you're basically pulling the arm out of the shoulder. So I'd probably do just a med ball slam at that point. But yes, in thin lines, but where they're trying to go, is correct. In terms of pre-race, there's stuff that something called post-activation potentiation, which can, depending on how you stimulate it, can last up to 24 hours. Right. Basically what you're doing is you're stimulating the nervous system, to be working at a higher output than baseline, right?
Okay.
So if let's say, I mean, most of the research is done in trying to do it within kind of 5 to 10 minutes. So let's take a heavy back squat, for example, right? I'm gonna go into the squat rack. I'm gonna load up. I'm gonna do one, maybe two really heavy back squats. And now my muscle units are, the musculature is a little bit more receptive to what's going on. The nervous system is heightened. There's also some stuff saying that I forgot what it's called now, but the musculature is more aligned, which means it's now going to flow, like it's going to move quicker. And the idea is that, you know, once fatigue is gone and you're feeling rested, your nervous system is still at a slightly higher output, which means now, let's say if we were going to go do a jump, we would jump higher.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's how, that is kind of how potentiation works. It's then balancing how can we get, how to load it, and then how to time it so that they have this heightened response and they're not just fatigued by the race, and everyone's different in that aspect.
Yeah, the best person I've heard who uses this kind of is Jesse Putz. Before he goes into a 50 freestyle, he does a heavy bench, and then he'll go to the warm-up, swim the warm-up, get on the blocks, and he says by that point, he's like switched on, he's ready to go, just from that heavy bench he's done about 2 hours before the race.
Yep. But you were joking with me before, saying Ben Proud doesn't even warm up, he just benches and then goes in the pool. But it's the same idea, right? You load up heavy, and then, I'm not saying he obviously does do that, like, but it's that, you load up heavy, you are at a heightened response, you get in the pool, you swim.
Yeah. No, it's something that I definitely want to try out and see how it works. I remember during last taper we had, we were doing some heavy deadlifts in the morning, and then we had some test swims in the evening, and I was feeling on fire at that point. And though I was feeling really tight and heavy as such, I was just so switched on, and I definitely felt really good at that point.
Okay, good.
It's what we like. It's what we like.
What we like. Fast swimming. Right. So, what plans have you got coming forward then, Tom? What's next?
I mean, right now, I'm just trying to keep people healthy. I'm just trying to keep people healthy and active, so that when we get back into the pool, they are healthy and they can swim. And then I will go. I'll go from there.
So that's another thing. Over lockdown, like, what can people do? Because they can't get in the pool right now. They can't really get in a river because that's very cold. So
well, people are still going swimming in the sea.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of those and I'm like, nah, sorry. But yeah, what can people do right now? For the next 2 weeks, we're in lockdown. Squat,
push, pull. You know, if you've got bands, you can do some pull work, or just do some stuff to work. You can do other stuff to work on your back. Just stretch, breathe. Just the way I'm approaching land training right now, like I said, I'm just trying to keep people healthy and keep people moving. So we are going to continue to squat. We are going to like go through these basic movement plans, make sure everyone's in control, and try and do some stuff more tissue tolerance type stuff, so that when they get back in the pool, they can deal with swimming. And just open up the shoulders and all that kind of stuff. That's pretty much outside of that. Yeah, you can do some ballistic stuff. You can jump. You can, if you've got a football or something, you can do some throws, right, just to keep some kind of velocity through there and some intensity through the joints. Core work. Yeah, go for running. I'd prefer people to go cycling, because at least that's non-weight bearing like swimming, and nobody's going to bust their knee or their Achilles out. But yeah.
No, I think it's the time to take care of yourself. It's the time to take care of yourself, isn't it? Yeah. Whether obviously being through your phys side of stuff, doing your strength and conditioning, but taking the time after that, do your mobility. I spoke to you about this before, Tom, that the gift that all of these lockdowns are giving us is time. It's the gift of time to get on top of injuries or imbalances. It's giving people time to recover fully. You're seeing kids who have grown 3 inches over the first lockdown simply because they're not doing, but putting out as much energy. So all of that energy, oh God, let's help this guy grow. Which obviously comes with its challenges in the gym, because they're taller, they don't know how to control themselves.
We've got a couple that are like, I'm literally like, the way I've described them is trying to learn how to use their bodies. They've shot up 3 inches, their legs and arms have suddenly got, you know, longer. They're like, whoa, how does this work? So asking them to try and bench would be stupid, because they're still trying to learn how to just hold something, like, you know.
Yeah. No, at first. Right. Well, thanks very much, Tom, for coming in today. It's been really good. We've learned a lot of stuff. If you want to get in contact with Tom, your contact details are, what's your Insta and bits like that?
Instagram is at CoachTCPerformance. And I think my Twitter is at CoachTCPerform1. I'll give it to you and you can put it in the show notes and stuff anyway.
Yeah, we'll put it down the bottom. If you want to listen to the podcast, we are on Spotify and most podcast sort of like areas you can find with platforms, that's the word. If you want to follow us on social media, it's the Swim Coaches Podcast on Facebook and Instagram. Get in to all the conversations that we got going on there. Our latest post has had over 700 interactions with a lot of interesting things about talking about high intensity, low yardage. So we'll be putting a lot of different bits like that on for people to get interactive with, and we can start talking about that in some of the latest podcasts. We will have the Chris Nielsen podcast on. We had a bit of technical difficulty, so he's the next one to come on. He is the next one to come on. He will be back. So yeah, if thanks for listening. Thanks, Tom, for coming on.
Thanks very much, Tom.
Yeah, and we'll be back with
It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, everyone, for listening.